Hi, I'm Libby Fulton.
And I'm Greg Greenfell.
And we like to garden.
Like to garden. We like to garden. We like to garden. We like to garden.
Welcome everyone to another episode of We Like to Garden. I'm Greer and I'm here with Libby and we have a special guest tonight. We have Ruth and she is from Grow, Nurture, Nourish, and that's from your Instagram. Is that what you call your kind of garden or?
Yeah, that's I guess what I call my garden space and I guess my theory towards gardening as well.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, and so it's grow.nurture.nourish for people if you want to find Ruth on Instagram.
Yeah.
So welcome, Ruth.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you here tonight.
I know, it's exciting to have a Christchurch gardener because we've never, had a Christchurch gardener on before. And so I am really keen. I'm looking forward to picking your brains about what to grow, especially in winter, because I struggle with that.
Fantastic. I love sharing what I'm doing.
Perfect. So if you want to share a little bit about your garden and your space generally and tell everyone kind of what you're working with and, yeah, kind of have you always been into gardening? Just, yeah.
Cool.
Tell us everything.
Perfect. So kia ora, I'm Ruth. I'm in Spraydon in Christchurch and we have about 8 garden beds in our backyard and a whole lot of blueberry bushes and some fruit trees like peach and persimmon and apples. And apricots. So I'm really enjoying the South Island weather that can grow apricots and things really well. Originally I'm from Auckland, but I've been here for nearly 9 years now and definitely call it home.
Oh, have you been in the garden, in that garden for 9 years?
In this garden for about 6 years. So previously when I was...
And did you plant all those things or was it all some of it in the garden?
The peach tree was already there and one of the apple trees, but we've... Otherwise, you planted all the blueberry bushes and the apricots and crab apple and the persimmon and feijoas as well.
I don't think I've ever seen a persimmon tree.
Oh, they're well worth it. They take a while to fruit. So we've had ours in the ground for 5 years and this is the first time we've had a really decent crop, which is both because of some late frosts, but also just because persimmon trees take a long time to crop. But they're beautiful because they get amazing autumnal leaves. And then when all the leaves drop off, they have the like golden orange globes of the persimmon still on the tree. If you've got time, yeah, definitely worthwhile. But you need to pre-book persimmon trees because they sell out. So if you want one, you've got to kind of book it in the year before or cross your fingers and hope they've got a spare one at the nursery.
Oh, I had no idea.
I didn't know they were such a hot commodity down here. But I know. That's really
they grow
hot.
Well.
I feel like it makes me want one more.
So
I love a hard-to-get tree.
They can quite easily tolerate down to about -5. And so they're a good kind of coming into winter. And they're just so, as lots of things are at the moment, so expensive in the shops and such a nice treat. Mm. And you can eat them at so many varying stages from kind of crisp apple kind of crunch when you get it all the way through to jelly, depending on your preference. So there you go. Something for next winter to add into your garden or maybe this winter if you're lucky.
I know. But I feel like because I didn't grow up with like persimmons, I've seen them as such a luxury item. I would never even think to... That's something that I could achieve and have a tree in my backyard. So that's
there cool. There you go. I'll be checking really that you plant one.
Just one of the 100 trees that I've got to plant. Yeah.
Could always do with more space for more fruit trees.
I know. So that's like, sounds like you've done a lot, but you obviously had a couple of fruit trees. So I guess going back to your gardening journey, you came from Auckland. Were you able to garden there? Or have you grown up gardening? Or is this something that you sort of fell into, and I guess with your garden that you currently have in the last few years?
Definitely got more into it the last few years. Growing up, I was really lucky that both sides of my family, my grandparents were both into gardening. On my mum's side, it was more flowers and ornamentals, and dad's side was more vegetables. But sadly, both my grandparents from each side passed away before I got into gardening. So I wasn't able to glean all their knowledge, but I definitely feel like it's been passed down into me. And in Auckland, kind of dabbled in gardening a little bit, but was renting. So I didn't buy until moving to Christchurch. And I felt like that's when I could really literally get into the soil and not worry about what I did. And so since being in this property for about the last 6-7 years, have been really getting into it. And when we moved here, there was kind of one small garden bed across the fence. Otherwise, just a lot of grass and roses. And so we've slowly built up, and that's probably one thing that I really recommend to people is don't just jump in and think I want to grow everything and do everything at once, because that's when you just get completely overwhelmed and it becomes too big and too much and life happens and then it just gets all weedy. So we started with 2 garden beds And then we grew it with four more garden beds and added some chickens. And then post-lockdown added a glasshouse and two more garden beds. And then maybe at some point we might add another three. But we've got another baby coming along, so decided we'd take a little pause knowing that we don't want to overwhelm ourselves and then maybe add a few more later. But it's definitely addictive. You definitely keep on thinking you can add more and more, especially as your family grows.
Yeah. And you find different things to grow and you get excited about it and you run out of space.
Yeah.
And yeah, I get it.
And I definitely try to grow something new every year to either challenge myself or something just seems interesting. And so then it's trying to be like, oh, I really liked that last year. That was a new thing. Now I've got another new thing to incorporate into my garden again this year.
Yes.
Yes, so true. Oh, that's I think probably one of the best tips, that yes, jumping into gardening, but yeah, you don't have to go gung-ho and do everything at once, which I think a lot of people fall into that trap.
And that's one thing with having your garden beds is traditionally people think of planting in rows and having your broccoli here and your cabbage over there and kind of having everything very segmented. But now kind of through research and just how a lot of things are going, having a polyculture garden that makes you sound really flash, so having things all mixed in together, so interplanting, is a really amazing way to go because it helps with the soil health, it helps with keeping pests away and incorporating and attracting beneficial insects, but also it means you can put a whole lot of things in the same place, and so you only need one garden bed and you can have your carrots and your Brussels sprouts and your broccoli, and then you can end up putting tomatoes in there and just have everything all mixed in together, so you've got easy to harvest because it's one place, but also you can easily grow your gardens while still having a whole massive variety.
I love that. Yeah. You're talking to me with the easy to harvest.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's good because if the more you cram in the beds, the less weeds you're going to have to pull out.
That is definitely another big thing of mine, is having a weedless garden, that you won't have a weedless garden. There's kind of weeds blowing on the wind. They come in bird poo. They come in so many different ways. You'll always end up with weeds. But having things planted closely, so you've got that leaf cover, but also having some really good mulching means I barely weed at all. Generally, it's if I'm going out to harvest, I might see something. I'll just kind of pull one thing out at a time, but I don't need to spend hours weeding, which if that was the case, I wouldn't be able to have a vegetable garden because I don't have hours to put into it as much as I'd like to.
Oh, I know. This is actually probably one of the first years that I've had sort of a similar size, sorry, not size, styled veggie plot. And I have, that's one thing I've definitely noticed, is just cramming as much as I can in and having a variety. You notice when a weed's there, but you, because they're so few and far between, it really is the best of both worlds. Being able to have everything and do less amount of work.
Yeah, definitely the way to go. Everyone's so busy these days, you don't have the time to put into weeding. You just want to eat what you've got. So any way to make it easier just to eat and not have to weed is a bonus.
That is good. And do you have any other kind of tips for maximising kind of your output without – what am I trying to say? Like maximising what you're doing with the little amount of time spent.
What I really like doing is underplanting. And so I kind of follow the no dig, so I don't pull things out of the garden. Instead, I cut things off at soil level or just under, which means if I've got a plant that I know has only got a few more weeks left in it, what I'll do is I'll plant something quite near it, maybe under the leaves. And so it's getting its roots in the soil and it's starting to grow up already. So that by the time the other one is done, I just cut that one out and then there's another one already there to replace it of either the same or something similar.
That is genius.
It is.
That is such a good idea.
And so you've always got something going on, and again it's really good for soil health because you've got the roots in the soil, so you've got things for all the microbes and everything in there to keep going and having fun with. So it's takes a little bit of thinking, but whether you plant from seeds or whether you buy transplants, it's an easy way just to plug things in and then keep the garden going and going.
I love that. Do you know, it's my first year I've done no dig and I'm starting out pretty small, and I by accident kind of did the similar sort of thing, and then by purpose I did some underplanting under some kale, and it's amazing actually once I cut back and I in the height of summer what actually was still coming up and was protected from the summer heat as well, because that's usually one of my problems that I've had in the past is my timing is absolutely atrocious with rotating crops.
Yeah, I haven't nailed it yet.
Who has? The seasons keep changing on us.
And you think you're onto one of it, you're not. But that was the first time. So I'm excited to actually give this a more sort of conscious thought with my, I've got three no-dig beds that are currently empty for the current season to think about how I'm going to fill those and rotate. Mm. That's such a great tip.
And what you're saying about the protection is such a big thing, because in summer it gets protected from all the heat while they're just little seedlings, but then in the winter they get more protection from the frost, so it becomes more of a little kind of insulated layer. So no matter what the season, it's just got great benefits. And so
yeah, it's like a little community of plants. It's so cute.
And if you find yourself as being really busy, suddenly even though you've been busy, you've actually got things still going, which is awesome.
I know, because I have, it's never happened before, but I've still got lettuces, come and cut again, lettuces growing at the moment, but it's because they've been tucked in and they're surrounded by herbs and things like that. So yeah, it's been really exciting to think what I usually wouldn't have imagined I could, so I wouldn't even bother to have sowing like those lettuces so late in autumn, but being able to have that with the no-dig style, what I have produced at this time of year is crazy to me. But
and it just shows that you're working with the garden rather than against it. When you work with the garden, it's just so much easier, which is about planting things at the right time as well as having things in your garden that can protect each other, so you're not trying to run out with frost cloth every night or trying to pull it back off or whatever. So yeah, working with the garden is definitely the way to go.
So true.
I guess in that vein, do you have any more, like, you talk about the beds that you've had and now you obviously have grown, but you are able to produce a lot for the space that you have as well.
I think it's the succession planting is one of the big things, is trying to always have something on the go, which I was really good at doing before we had our little one, and post little one doesn't always work. Sometimes I've been really good and then things get pulled out, but you just take a breather and you keep going. But being at it, as I said, not waiting for a whole crop to finish before you're pulling things out, being at it interplant and put things in works really well. So you've always kind of got something on the go. And by having lots of different variety, I've definitely learnt you only plant when you eat. We had a season where we never ate silver beet, and I used to grow lots of silver beet and thought, why am I doing this? So I stopped growing it for ages. And now we're regrowing it because it's so easy to incorporate into meals. So just choosing kind of what your favourites are, what your family likes to eat, because then that saves you money in the grocery bill. But it means it'll actually get eaten and not go to waste.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that, of growing things I don't eat.
Or having friends that you can hand it on to. Or what I really recommend is if you've got a local veggie stall, so we've got one not too far from us, is intentionally growing a little bit more than you need so you can go give it and put it in the veggie stall so other people can have it. So if you've got a bit of space or something that you don't particularly like silver beet, when I was doing that, I was always just chucking it down in the veggie stall, knowing that other people were enjoying it even if I wasn't, but then feeling a bit guilty that I was giving people things I don't like. But now I like silver beet, so we're okay again.
That is fantastic. So is that locally in Spraydon?
Yeah, so if you Google, there's quite a few veggie stalls around New Zealand, or if you look at community Facebook pages, and if not, people can start ones up. So for our one, it's just definitely quite seasonal because there's a lot more in there in summer, but people just put the extra produce there and people can go grab it for free, and it's right opposite of school, which is quite nice. So I try and always drop things off if it's a day that I'm not working, which is one day a week, near the school bell time, so that I know it doesn't wilt over the day, but also that means families can grab it on their way home, especially in summer when there's like nice fruit and stuff as well.
You are an angel.
I know. Maybe I feel bad.
That blows me away. I love that. That's awesome to think that you have taken the time and really thought about that, because that's true, because you've gone to this effort to grow it and you want someone else to use it, but what's the point in having it sit there and no one's going to take it? So,
which is also the joy of growing from the garden. That's one thing I've really noticed, is being able to just nip outside and grab a couple of leaves for this or that and a couple of carrots and not have them sit in the fridge for 3 weeks and go blah. That you just kind of grab as you need, and they're always as fresh as they can be, and which makes them so much tastier and so much better for you.
And you notice the difference.
Yes.
Actually, I don't even know if it's, but like, most of the time I'm like, oh, these carrots are delicious, but I think I'm just gloating in my head because I'm like, I grew this.
They definitely taste better.
They definitely taste better.
Isn't it something to do with the sugars haven't started decaying or something like that? It's something why it tastes better.
And if you've sung to them, you know, they've got all this love in them as well, so they're just growing so well.
I guess that kind of leads into your approach. You've kind of been discussing it now about like organic gardening, but why is it so important to you?
I would say I'm organic-ish, and that's because I'm not completely. So I use any seeds, and organic or inorganic, and whatever seed raising it mixes on special. But otherwise, I don't use any sprays, organic or inorganic, and I use generally our own compost, which we've got our own chickens, which makes a really good compost mix. Really important for me because then I know, well, already exactly where the foods come from. But we eat, especially our little one, directly from the garden. He'll just go on and pull off a head of sprouting broccoli or grab the leaves. Often quite lazy, we can't be bothered washing it, and we know that it's only ever had rain on it, so we don't actually really need to wash it. And so just knowing that what we're putting in our body is completely clean and good, and not worried about our little boy kind of digging up the soil and putting it in his mouth and eating leaves and things straight from it, which is just a really good peace of mind. But also, knowing exactly what's going in our bodies is really good too.
Yes, and having that control in your garden space.
And it's funny, like when I eat vegetables from the supermarket, I know that they're covered in pesticides, but it doesn't bother me, but it would bother me if I had put the pesticides myself. Yes. I think it becomes more real,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you've seen that process happen then, and you're not interested in eating it, but when it's from the supermarket, I don't really think about it.
And one thing with a more organic approach to gardening, what I've really noticed, I've kind of really been doing it the last 4 years, maybe more intense, the lack of bugs, the lack of bugs that I don't want has been amazing, because no matter what you do, there's no selective things out there. So if you put a type of bug spray when you're trying to get the caterpillars or trying to get the aphids, they end up getting the beneficials as well.
Yeah.
And so previously, where I had so many more aphids, I've got so many less aphids now. And I'm more likely to see ladybugs and hoverflies and different things in the garden, which are the more predatory ones, which is fantastic. And so just having that biodiversity, and actually, if there are aphids, having a sacrificial plant where they're on that one and being like, you know what, I'm just going to leave them there, because if I do have a few aphids, then that means the other bugs will come and get them. If I don't have any, then it doesn't kind of get them to come. And with the way I do my gardening, because I don't have, for example, all the kale in just one bed, that means it might get one bed of kale or it might get one plant, but the other beds are completely fine. So I'll just be like, you know what, I can leave them there. They're not doing any more harm. And the other ones are completely fine, because things like aphids will blow in on the wind. And so you could eradicate them 1 week and then the next week they're all back because your neighbour's got a big infestation. So just learning to live with some things and be a bit more relaxed has been a really good way of thinking about things too.
This is the takeaway for me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I've just had an epiphany moment when you're talking, and that's probably why a lot of my brassicas in autumn, because they're all together. They just got absolutely attacked. I was so smug for a while. I was like, no, I don't have any white butterfly problems. A couple of days later. And it has been a nightmare trying to get rid of them. And I don't spray anything. Yeah. I don't use anything like that. But do you have any good sacrificial plants or benefit to sort of detract from them? Do you have a white butterfly issue at all?
We're actually really lucky with white cabbage butterflies, because we just have so many birds in our backyard. That even though I see lots of butterflies, I barely see any caterpillars, and I think it's because of all the birds, which is a pro and a con, because it also means at certain times of the year we can't grow things like lettuce because the birds just decimate it if we leave it uncovered, or they'll pull out all the seedlings. So it means we've just got to cover things at different times. But for white cabbage butterflies, we're pretty okay. For the other ones, with the idea of the sacrificial, normally the aphids or whatever bugs they are, just choose the one that is the weakest one, because it's got the least amount of sugars and it's the one that just naturally they're attracted to. So if there are some plants that are a little bit bleh in there, if you can handle it, just actually leaving it there. If it's not actually diseased, it's not going to spread to other plants. And just seeing how things go, give it, a week, and hopefully you'll see a whole lot less aphids there, because you might have the ladybugs coming in. Or you'll notice that they're only on that plant and not on the other ones. And if you've got a good few other ones and you're like, you know what, we can sacrifice this one, let the aphids do their thing, they're part of the natural system, and then just worry about the other ones. But if it gets really bad, you can always just, again, I chop it off at the bottom, put it in the compost, and then it's gone. Your problem's gone for at least a week, and then they might come back again.
Yeah. The joy of gardening. Oh, that, I really like the sound of that. I find that really interesting about the low sugar. I never had thought of it that way in the plants. So. That's really cool.
I knew that slugs and snails, I know that they kind of, they get weak plants. They go for the weaker ones.
Yeah, I had no idea.
And tasty ones. So one thing I always do with that kind of idea of companion planting and stuff in my garden is have pansies or violas throughout my veggie garden, because they love those flowers. And so what I do is, when I'm out harvesting and stuff, if I notice there's some holes in those flowers, then I know that I've got some slugs or snails in the garden. And that's when I'll go out at night with a torch and do some hand picking off. So it's just a really easy way of knowing. And they go there first, generally, before other places. So I'm not as having to open up things and finding slugs and snails halfway and then we're having them decimated overnight because I'm just kind of keeping, while I'm walking around and harvesting, just taking a few extra seconds just to have a look at the petals and being like, cool, no holes, I'm good. Oh, there's a hole there, I might need to pop out tonight.
Oh, wait, can I just tell you as an aside, Jack went out tonight, this is my husband, Ruth, Jack, he went out tonight to get some snails because we have got issues on issues with our snails. And he got, I would say, a punnet, like, you know, one of those little punnets, and it was full of baby snails.
Wow.
We cannot, and we do this, like, once every few weeks, yeah. We go out and get, like, I would say upwards of 70 snails on one of these trips. We cannot get them under control.
We might find one snail every 7 or 8 weeks.
I'm so jealous.
And slugs, yeah.
I'm so jealous.
I don't know. Greer has always had this problem. But
could be just the location.
Yeah, I reckon it's because there's none. Like, I live in a really built up area,
yeah.
And I reckon it's because there's nothing else for them to eat in my immediate, like, houses all around.
So they're like, yeah, the buffet's here. Let's go.
I reckon, yeah, pretty much. God, it's
you need to get chickens. And
I know. Well, I want some ducks.
Oh, ducks.
Actually,
yeah, there you go.
Same thing. Yeah. One day. And you've briefly mentioned your compost, mm-hmm. but can you, because Libby has started her compost journey this year, last year? Yeah.
Into last year, but I've ordered, it's been tough going, I'm going to be honest with you, Ruth.
So, what's been tough?
I thought I was nailing my ratios, but I absolutely wasn't. And I recently turned a whole heap and I was like, going to be so confident that the bottom half was going to be quite decayed. It wasn't. I've got way too much like brown stuff in there. So, I'm really going to have to focus it like going into spring because I was thinking coming into the end of winter, I was like, with a lot of the beds, I was going to I thought I had like literally a pallet by a pallet. I don't even know what that is in square meters full of compost for the garden. I really don't. I don't have, I don't know if I have been turning it enough, and I think that's maybe my problem too.
Have you got a compost screw? Do you know what that is? From your local hardware store, they're like $15 to $20, and they're called a compost screw. You can just Google it. And it's a long metal pole with a screw at the bottom and a handle at the top that you turn around. And so that for me was a game changer with my composting, because what you can do is it gets a little bit addictive. Like, you only need to do it once, probably every 2 weeks, maybe 1 week. Sometimes I'll do it every couple of days because it's so satisfying, like pulling up the lower level and getting all these worms. But for compost, as you said, you've got to kind of have the ratios of the browns and the greens, so the nitrogen and carbon. And really there's all these different ratios, but you want 50-50 minimum, if not more browns. Mm-hmm. And so once you've got all those in there, you need that ratio. You also need to have water and then air. And so that's where having the compost screw works in, that the water generally comes from the plants you put in. If it's the middle of summer, you might need to add some more water, but the air is the hardest one.
Okay.
And so by using the compost screw, what you're doing is every now and then you're putting the compost screw down, twirling it around, pulling it up, which means you're pulling up some of the pre-composted stuff at the bottom through to the next layer, which helps all the microbes, which helps breaking down that next layer, but also aerates it as well. And you can pull in things like the corners into the middle so you don't end up with the dryness down the corners. And so being able to do that semi-regularly, not getting too addicted to it, really helps with the composting process.
And so with it, so as you say in the corner, so do you just choose, okay, I'm going to leave it for 2 weeks maybe in the middle and then I might choose another spot on the end? Or is it really good if you put it in the middle at bringing up the whole, turning the whole bottom layer that I don't, because at the moment I'm sort of getting a whole pitchfork in and like really lifting from the bottom, like trying to mix it
up. What I do is it's just a screw that you put in and out, so it just lives next to my compost bin when I'm not using it. And so generally when I do it, I do 5 screws. So I'll start in the middle and screw the middle, just however deep I feel like going / however much my stomach muscles can handle, which is not much at the moment. And so do kind of the middle and then pull up and then do either side or the corners and pull them, kind of put the screw in diagonally and pull them up diagonally. And so you don't need to go to the bottom each time because you've been doing it as you've been going. And so it just means rather than having to do this big flip and big change around and big thing, it's literally, again, a 2-minute job at most that you might do every couple of weeks. And so again, it makes gardening easier, it makes things more achievable and ends you with good compost. And if you've got a good ratio when you do that, you should be able to put your hand on top and it should be warm. the idea of hot composting is amazing, but in a backyard garden, it's really hard to achieve because hot composting, you really need to have all your materials in one go, put them all in at once, and have a good meter squared space where you're doing it. Where for me, I've just got two of those Dialect kind of black bins that I got secondhand. So the actual space capacity isn't really enough to get hot compost, and I never build it all at once. It's just the veggie scraps from dinner and what I've been picking things and the shavings from the chicken coop. So it's only slowly built up. But with having the right ratios, it does get warm, and having that warmth is what breaks things down a bit faster. But it's still at a temperature where worms are in it, because with hot compost, you don't get worms until it's heated right up and then cooled down. Where with my kind of cooler, warmer compost, I've generally got worms all the way through. So it's quite funny being able to put the screw in, pull it up, feel that it's a little bit warm and see all these worms all going through it, which is just fantastic.
Okay, I have learned satisfying. More than I have either from any book, any YouTube, just listening to you now. I'm out to get one. I have never heard. I'm into anything that can help save me. And it hasn't been warm. It was for a while, but it hasn't been for a long time. And I got caught up in my ratios. I was so panicked that I was, because it started to smell a little bit. So I was like, I haven't been putting enough brown and I need to put more in. And so I've been really focused. And I had so much at the end of autumn that I probably haven't had enough green actually to help break down and get those microbes in there. So, okay, that's great.
And it's just a journey. And that's kind of one thing I've really realized with gardening is that every year there's kind of only one, maybe two growing seasons. And so, for example, I've been in this place 6-7 years. I've only had 6-7 growing seasons. And compost, when you're doing kind of warm to cold, it takes kind of 6 to 8 months. So it's kind of only 6 to 8 months that I've had 6 to 8 times I've done like good compost. And so gardening, you've got some quick results with some things like spinach and lettuce that grow really fast, but you've got these long things as well. You were like, actually, I've got a good few years that I need to take to learn, which just means you're in it for the long game, which is a pro and a con.
It is, but you've actually just made my day by saying that, because you know it's coming up about 8 months since this lot's been in there, so
yeah, you're going okay.
I'm going okay.
And no matter what, you're creating your own compost and you're saving it from the landfill. And it'll be a closed loop system. So it's going straight back in your garden, which is just fantastic.
It's so exciting because I've always wanted to do that. So to be able to do it, even though I would like, as you say, it's like kids, being able to spend more time than what I currently have on it. But to think that I'm eventually going to have that back in the garden. I talked about Greer one episode when I first started composting about how much we have saved from going, you just think is just scraps and you think, oh, that's not going to take up much room in the bin. It really does. We couldn't get over how much less we are filling up our kitchen rubbish bin from what we are taking out to compost.
It's amazing. And once you kind of get into a routine, there's so much you actually can compost. Like they say not to compost bread or meat scraps or things like that. We chuck everything in there because it's in such small amounts. We've never had an issue. Touch wood. But yeah, we're fine. And my thing is, if it's something that we can eat, it's something that decomposes. And so it's something that can be used again.
Okay, that's good to know. Because every now and then, I think one night, my husband put a whole heap of meat and stuff in there. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, really judgmental. Like, you don't put meat in the compost?
Well, we don't put a massive amount.
Yeah, ate it my bin. I don't know what it was, but I'll tell him that minimal amounts. I'll be like, I'll live.
And it probably depends on your area. Like, we don't really have an issue with rats or mice, but if you did, probably would want to avoid that more. But like, because we're in New Zealand, we don't have raccoons and different things that will get into the compost bins as much. And so we don't have those kind of larger animals, where a lot of things that are recommendations for overseas just actually don't apply to us, because we've just got such a different climate and such different animals that are around us.
And that's why it's so nice to talk to somebody who is local, because a lot of the gardening advice or things that you see are so not related to us here.
And that's how I started doing things online, is I actually started with a YouTube channel. And that was because when I moved to Christchurch, I was trying to find things about gardening in Christchurch compared to Auckland. And at that point, there was just nothing out there. And so I was doing a bit of study at that point, where it was kind of just like, just give things a go. And I'm like, okay, I will. And so did that for a little while, and then stopped when we had our little one, because it was just too hard to try and do the filming and editing, which is when I changed to Instagram, because it was just a whole lot easier to manage and just do quick little snippets, but still love sharing. I'm a teacher by day, and so I just feel like I can't really get that out of my system. I just love sharing what we do and the learning along the way. And if I can get one more person to have a go at gardening, that's a bonus.
That's awesome. I your YouTube videos under your same
name? No, they're under Rugrew. So yeah, haven't made ones for ages, but there's still a good few years of them up there with different seasons, and you can kind of see the garden right from when we had nothing to pretty much where it is now.
Oh, awesome. That's really cool. And I guess that leads on to with like composting, but your chickens. Yep.
So we had chickens at our last place as well, and then we've got some new chickens since moving here. And for me, they're just such a fantastic part of the garden that it would be really hard doing gardening without them, because it's so great when you can see some leaves on plants just getting a little bit past the use by date, just chuck them over the fence into the chicken coop and know they're having a great time. And then we have untreated wood shavings and where they nest at night, or where they roost and in the nesting boxes, and they poo a lot at night. And so then kind of once a week we clear out that goes into the compost heap, which is the brown and green already together.
Mm-hmm.
And they just love it. We used to let them free range around our backyard until we had our son, and then our son was a little bit too interested in their poo for my liking. So now they're in their coop the whole time, but they've got quite a decent size run. Which is literally the fence between them and the garden. So whenever we're out there, there's always easy things to chuck over the fence. And we've got a little viewing window in there as well. So our son and any little friends that come around love looking through the window and poking through veggies for them to eat. So definitely, if you've got space, a great addition to the garden. And they're relatively easy to keep. And you've got the added bonus of eggs, which while we've had all the egg shortages, I've felt a little bit kind of like, oh, I haven't really noticed it at all, because it's just business as usual for us. Feel quite quite good just being able to use eggs still.
That's so cool. I would love to get chickens. My kids actually are afraid of dogs, but chickens, what, you know, most kids hate chickens or like don't like birds, but mine love them.
Oh, well, since you're lucky, left to pop over and have a look at the compost and the chickens.
I would love to. Okay.
I have been hosting classes through Secret Gardens, but with baby coming along, we've only got one more class coming up, and that's already fully booked.
Oh, I'll have to wait till, oh, what a shame, after you've had your baby.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you're prepping in winter for spring? And obviously it's a little bit different this winter because you are pregnant, and so your spring might be looking a little bit different.
I've got the hope that my spring will look pretty similar. We'll see. But one good thing about Christchurch is that kind of technically everyone thinks of the 1st of September being the start of spring. But really, we're a good 6 weeks, if not 8 weeks behind, which means with baby being due at the start of spring, they actually got a bit more grace time. And in my hope, baby will sleep lots. We'll see. Don't know. but throughout winter, my normal tasks is adding more mulch and adding more compost, which some people are like, oh, you can't add compost in winter because it's too much nitrogen and it promotes too much growth. But it's actually pretty okay. Like, the plants generally know what to do. And it's more of the seasonal, the warm days that will give them more growth than the added nitrogen. And here in Christchurch, our winter's been crazily warm so far. And so there has been random growth that we wouldn't normally have. But it's definitely not to do with putting on compost. It's more to do with just the seasons. So yeah, mulching. So I try and make sure I've got a good 3, 4, 5 centimetres of mulch, whether the mulch is just straight compost, whether it's pea straw, because pea straw is generally pretty accessible at the right time in Christchurch and a good price compared to other places in New Zealand. So for that, it gives a good base to continue rotting down a little bit, but making sure the soil doesn't erode over winter, and it also locks in some of the warmth, which is really good. And then general, like, removing any summer plants that I've not got around to removing, and then they're all blah because they've been frosted. And just general tidying up, I end up with little punnets around everywhere and bits of this and that. So try and put them all in the right place. And then do a bit of fruit tree pruning, which is a whole another topic, because it just depends on what the fruit tree is, depending on when is the best time to prune it. Some of them are in the middle of the winter when it's dormant. Some are straight after fruiting. So give them a little bit of tidy up as well. And I've recently been just redoing my strawberry bed. So we have our strawberries and our blueberries and a boysenberry. And our blackcurrants, actually, all together along the same fence, because that means we only have to net one area, where previously I was trying to net other areas from birds. But we've had a whole lot of strawberry runners, so just been replanting them, which I've just recently seen there's meant to be a bit of a strawberry plant shortage this year due to all the flooding earlier in the year. So runners are brilliant, which is when the original strawberry plant puts off another plant. And they generally, by this time of year, have got a few roots already in the bottom. So just cut them off from the mother plant and then put them a bit of a space away, which means strawberry plants do have kind of a season that they kind of only last really well for a couple of years, and then they just don't produce as much. So having your own runners, being able to keep going with the strawberries, is a great way of refreshing.
Oh, I didn't know that about strawberries.
They do okay. In commercial ones, they'll only use them for probably 2 seasons. Where at home, you don't have the same commercial output. So you can definitely have them more. But the younger the plants, generally, the more strawberries you get, or the larger ones rather than a whole lot of small ones.
I did not know that. Mm. That is really good to know. Mm.
So, yeah, a lot of tidying up and a lot of prep. Been starting a few seeds every now and then, which I keep inside, just so I've got a few ones ready to go when we get a bit warmer. But the seeds that I'm starting are all the winter ones still. So brassicas, which is the family that has the Brussels sprouts, the cabbage, the kale, the broccoli, because they're the ones that will be okay going into kind of the end of the frost season.
And do you use your greenhouse, obviously starting seeds and stuff, but do you use it in summer to growing like hot loving things?
Yes, so last summer I had predominantly eggplants and tomatoes in there. The summer before I had chilies in there, but I grew so many chilies. We've got so many in the freezer, I didn't need to grow anymore. And yeah, a lot of starting of ones, and grew loofahs for the first time last summer because that was my one plant I was going to try and grow as something new. And that went really well. So, and basil, I've always got some basil going in there too. So just, yeah, I always try and have something fun and new. So the year before was strawberry spinach, which I can highly recommend if you've got kids. It's a bit of an odd one where the leaves are like, they taste like spinach. They're probably the size of a large dessert spoon. But then when it goes to flower, you've got a whole lot of berries that look like kind of small raspberries, small strawberries. It's a really weird flavour. Like they're not, they taste more like spinach than like strawberries. So when I first had them, I was a bit disappointed because I was expecting all these sweet strawberries. But our son pops them like they would be strawberries. He just loves eating them. And they're really fun to add into salads and to, you can add them into like baking like you would any berries. And so that's a fun one that was my year before, which was my new one. So this year, I've got a different type of tomato, which is my new one I'm trying. So yeah, every year I try and add something different. And this is one from King Seeds, which is an Arctic one, which is meant to be better at growing in lower temperatures. So my hope is that I can start them a bit earlier and have them go a bit longer. So we'll see.
It's really cool. And what was it like with the strawberry spinach, the growing on that? Is it similar to the spinach?
Yeah, really.
Like a quick turnaround?
Yeah, quick turnaround. The seeds take a bit longer. So when you look at the timing for how long it takes, it's actually longer than that because the timing it gives is how long, which I can't remember off the top of my head, how long it is until you can harvest the leaves, which you can harvest the leaves and eat them like spinach and salads. But what you're kind of really waiting for is the berries to form. But then they do become a little bit weedy. So now I've got quite a few self-sown ones around the garden, which I'm not complaining about. I'm completely happy with them being self-sown, but also something that's to be aware of, which means then again, like they, some of them have actually lasted over winter where I wasn't expecting, but again, it's where they've kind of had some of the bigger plants cover over them. So hopefully as it comes into spring, they'll start getting off a bit earlier and we'll get some more little strawberry spinach berries earlier to be able to snack on and more of the spinach leaves.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. Your son will love that, especially if you're busy with baby. He can just help.
Oh, he already does it. He's a little bit disappointed. There's no blueberries on the plant at the moment, but we did find some sneaky raspberries a couple of weeks ago. Again, I had a big fennel plant that had grown over the raspberries and I hadn't tidied anything up yet, and I think just that cover and protection meant when I took it off there was suddenly some raspberries, which was very nice.
Amazing. And what else do you grow in winter? So this is what I'm very intrigued by.
So
because I've been quite boring this year, so I'm looking for inspo.
We now grow sprouting broccoli rather than normal broccoli heads because they just are so much more practical and you can just cut and come away, and so you get so many more harvests of them. Cabbage, kale, Brussels sprouts, those type of things. Leeks, spinach, silver beet. Carrots is something I've been really trying to have always in the ground because we just eat carrots all the time. And so while in winter they're not actively growing, I planted them before winter. Mm-hmm. And so they're just sitting in the ground just waiting to be harvested, really. Spring onions, and I've got some kind of perpetual celery that just kind of keeps growing and growing. So those are the main things I can think of that I've got in the garden at the moment.
Have you ever, because I've tried growing leeks and I actually do have some in the ground now.
Yeah.
And mine just, they wouldn't, like last winter, I grew ones called Winter Giant.
Yeah.
And I expected them to, but they were like smaller than a spring onion by the end of it. And this year I've got some more and they're still not really doing much.
So the key to planting leeks is to plant them from transplants, so grow them up from seeds or get them. And then when you plant them, you want to plant them in a deep hole. And so what, a deep wide hole and leave it deep and wide. So what I do is I turn over the rake and put the end of the rake into the ground and kind of push it down as far as I can, give it a wibble around. So you've only end up getting this tiny little green above the ground because that's where all the white forms and it can't grow bigger than the hole that it's in. And so if you've got a big hole, then it will be able to fill up into that hole. And so dirt and everything ends up falling into that hole, but it's very loose around it, so it's not trying to push against. And so that's how you get the white and it bigger. And then what you can do, once the greens grow up further, you can cover it with newspaper or things like that to promote more of the white stalk. But yeah, having that big hole to start is the kind of key. So if you're just putting seeds straight in the grounds or seedlings straight in holes, they don't really like to push against the soil as much, so you won't get them as big and chunky as your giants that you want.
That is great advice. And you've just unlocked a memory for me with the newspaper around the base. That's what my granddad did as a kid. I'm just envisioning it now in the garden.
There's all these things that just didn't make sense as kids, or you're just like, why are they people do that? And you're like, there's reason to the madness. There's a lot of old wives' tales as well, but there are things that really work.
Yeah.
That is a great tip. It makes so much sense. And I would have thought that they would be a bit like carrot, but they're actually not. They're the complete opposite, that they like being transplanted. So with your winter carrots that you're talking about that you put in, do you how late do you still like direct sow, or do you not direct sow?
Yeah, so carrots and coriander are the only things that I direct sow. Everything else I generally grow in punnets first. And I generally grow them in punnets first, one, because of the heavy mulching I do. And so heavy mulching inhibits seed growth, which means you're inhibiting the growth of weeds, but also you're inhibiting the growth of the seeds you plant. And so when I'm doing my carrots, I've actually got some old CD racks and some old just chicken wire that I move the pea straw away and then put that in the middle so that the pea straw doesn't cover over where the carrot seeds are. And I try and do not too many carrot seeds at once, so I don't have massive lot of carrots ready at once and then not enough room for other ones. So I think my latest one would have been about May that I planted, and they're definitely not ready to eat, but they've leafed up a lot. And I remember when I was first gardening, people told me not to grow carrots over winter because when they come into spring, they get lots of little like hairy legs on them. So the first couple of years, I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to them. You're not meant to grow carrots over winter because they get really hairy. And then one year I thought, stuff it, I'm going to try because I really like experimenting. And they did get like a little hairy, but as soon as you just give them a bit of a wipe when you rub off the dirt, they all go off and they taste just like carrots. So I'm like, yep, I'm going to grow carrots all year round now.
What a win. I feel like that is really cool because I planted a lot of carrots late this year for me, but the last lot went in maybe, I want to say early March, but it's good to know that I could push that out because, like you say, grow things that you know the family's going to eat. And carrot is just like a hands down winner all year round.
And one thing I try and do with the carrots is, because I used to be really good at recording when I was planting things and having a really good solid plan. Since having a little one, it's slipped a lot. Or when I do have a plan, then life happens. But I try and do a lot when I'm harvesting, so just making sure I'm casting my eyes over things. And once I see the carrot tops out of the ground have got to maybe 2 to 4 centimetres, that's when I'll plant my next lot. So then I kind of know that there's that succession happening rather than being like, I'm going to plant it every second weekend or things like that, because it just doesn't happen. And then you get behind and then it's just really overwhelming. So being able to look at what's growing. And then things like scarlet runner beans, really like them. And they grow from a root that can just stay in the ground all year round, which means come spring they're going to pop up on their own, which is also a really good indicator when it's a good time to plant other beans and things like corn, because it shows that the ground is warm enough. So when you've got things that you can leave in, such as the scarlet runners, if you like those beans, it's a really good soil indication, because every year, while you might do in Canterbury Show Weekend, which is Canterbury Anniversary Weekend, is kind of the grail of winter plant rather than Labour Weekend. When the ground's telling you itself it's ready, it's really good to be able to go with that, which again is working with the garden rather than against it.
Yes. Yeah, I've been learning more about that with Matariki and like really understanding what happens in your garden and looking for your signs of what it's looking like in winter and going forward with the new year. What are those telltale signs in your garden that spring is on its way? So that's really cool.
And it's exactly, and just I think you highlighting your garden is such a key. For me, that we've got some big trees on one side of our property and then on the neighbours as well. So even if we cut ours down, we'd still have big trees there, which means we've got some really shady areas, which means our microclimate is very different to neighbours that are just across the fence from us. And so when you're looking at theirs, you're like, why do you have that growing already? I've been trying and it's just not got it. Well, actually, it's because you'd have got this massively sunny area, which we don't have. And so just being aware of what's happening in your own garden and trying not to judge too much is a real key.
That is so true, yeah, because I look at other gardeners. I look at other gardeners to see what I should be doing. But actually, like, even, say, Libby and I, we live 20 minutes away from each other, but we'd have so, like, you'd have so much different.
Yeah, we often talk about, I Greer's garden's always far more ahead in time than mine is. Mm. Greer gave me some like poppies last year, and I was so excited about them because it was the first time I'd grown poppies. Yeah. And Greer's were flowering. I still hadn't even budded up. And we worked out similar that my garden was probably about 4 to 5 weeks behind her garden.
Yeah. And once you realize that, it's just trying to relax into it and being like, you know what, we're okay. I'm not doing anything wrong. It's just a different growing climate. And then what I found, things like being able to grow apricots and things like that, which you can't grow in the northern regions. You're like, you know what? I can grow apricots. Might not be able to do this, and I might have a smaller grower season, but I've got apricots. And just being able to celebrate your own.
Why can't they grow apricots?
Just stone fruits grow better in cooler climates with the cooling down period.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's why they have in central Otago.
True. And so people can come and see your garden. Are you shutting down visits for a wee while?
Yes, I've only got one more scheduled, and that one, is already full, and then baby comes. And so just want to take a bit of time without doing the garden tours, but hopefully we'll be starting them up, well, at some point next year, because I absolutely love doing them and it's a lot of fun and just love encouraging people to garden. But otherwise, I've got tips and tricks on Instagram and love talking garden with people. So if anyone's got questions, always willing to have a bit of a korero about it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because we've got lots of our listeners. Like, I think the majority of our listeners are from Christchurch. And, yeah, it can be hard finding other gardeners in Christchurch to kind of
connect with and kind of copy.
Yeah. That's what I like to do. I just like to copy what other better people are doing.
If people are happy with garden workshops with a baby in tow, they can contact Jane from Secret Gardens and they can sort out some workshops. So see how things go.
I would definitely love to come along and visit. That would be fantastic. And I don't mind that there's a baby in tow. I can even hold your baby while you talk.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of offers like that. So maybe we can just tag team and do it together.
You can talk. I'll just stay in the background. Oh, well, thank you so much for all your wisdom and advice tonight. I've learned so many things.
Same.
And I know that our listeners are going to get a lot out of it too, so. Thank you, Ruth.
I feel like my head is full of knowledge. I almost wish I had a notebook and I had been taking notes.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed chatting. It's always good fun chatting about gardening.
Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I hope your spring is you're able to get out in the garden this spring and you have a very restful baby.
Same here. That's what my hope is.
Yes, all the best with it, and look forward to seeing that journey on your Instagram too.
Yes, yeah.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you so much. And for our listeners, we will be back with another episode in 2 weeks. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.